John Kay from Fan the Flames Group of NA.
Half and half,
right? It's over at 8:45.
Okay. So. Thanks. I'm John. I'm an addict.
Hey, John.
Sounds odd to hear someone introduce me from Fan the Flames home group. I've been part of Why Die for so many years. A lot of years. Used to always say in that home group. I'm John. I'm an addict. Why are we here? You know, it's kind of nice. I need to start by saying, you know, a lot of people, I told a few people I'd be down here at like between 4 and 6 and work, you know, kept me late. And I got here and there was a few people that told everybody that I'd be here 5 minutes before. And that's kind of nice because no one ever believed in me before. And I showed up right at 5 minutes before. And they asked if I was okay because I was going right into lead. And, you know, I just show up and give and talk. You know, I used to try to talk to sound good, and I just talk to say whatever comes out of my mouth. I turn it over and give it to God. 2 nights ago, I was over at a penitentiary, and I was put on the spot at a moment's notice in front of 85 inmates. And, you know, it's, I guess, you know, from sticking around here, we're able to do that because it's about giving it away to keep it. But the topic is, why are we here? Pardon my profanity, because in order to get fucked, you got to be in a position to get fucked. Plain and simple, and that's what I did whenever I got here. I fucked myself. I had a disease that I didn't know I had, and there's part of this disease is, you know, is denial. And for a lot of years, I lived in denial that I had a problem, and I was living a lifestyle like as if, you know, there weren't police and that nothing would ever happen to me, and it did. And I ended up arrested in front of my mother. With a lot of dope, doesn't matter what kind, but it was a lot, and it was enough that it was going to send me away and do some time. And the seriousness of this disease is everybody knew I was going to do time except for me, because denial. You know, in my own head, somehow I was going to get out of the trouble that I got myself into. And even though the lawyer was telling me they carried mandatory guidelines, I was still going to get out of it. You know, and why I'm here initially what got me here was just trying to get some notes signed and go to rehabs and try to get a bunch of paperwork in order so when I got in front of a judge, he'd look at me and say, oh, you've been a nice little boy. Don't ever let me see you again. We all know how that worked out. You know, my first drug in life was fantasy, and I guess I was fantasizing about the judge just, you know, patting me on the shoulder and saying, I'm giving you another chance. But you know what? Life is real. And I lived in a fantasy even before I ever took drugs, and the drugs just magnified it. I had no idea how to do life, how to be responsible, and anything I ever tried before I got here didn't work. And I can't honestly say that I ever really worked at anything that I ever tried. It was usually just a means of trying to appease somebody for a moment in time to get them off my back, whether it was relatives, girlfriend, employers. And, you know, as soon as things cooled down, I'd be right back at doing whatever it was I was doing. If I wasn't already doing it, just hiding it better. But, you know, we often hear in meetings it referred to that, did you ever look at the 12 steps and what's the first word of the first 12 steps? And I was asked that real early in recovery when I asked to do my first step, and my sponsor at the time said, do you know what the first word of the first step was? And I didn't. And he asked me to write a paper on what the first word of first step was, and to read the chapter, Why Are We Here? And that was my first assignment. So it's kind of special to me that I'm speaking on this topic tonight. And in everything I've ever done since then, that still remains the most important lesson that I ever learned, was that assignment. And we don't ever hear it talked about, that chapter, why are we here? It doesn't say, why am I here? It says, why are we here? You know, it's through sharing and exposing myself to others that I've been able to recover and restore myself to some sense of functionality and to gain some maturity and some morals. A lot about what I wanted when I came in, I didn't really understand or know what it was about, but I just wanted to be free. And my way of thinking about what was free was happy, joyous, and high. I didn't know that it was about happy, joyous, and clean. And I had to stick around here and allow people to love me and accept me for who I was and go through what I went through to get what I have today. Oh, don't be smelling me like that, Chuck. You know, so whenever I was new, it was all about developing relationships with other people. I mean, why are we here? You go back to the, you know, historically, you know, when the 12 steps began, it was about one person helping another person, two doing what one can't do alone. And initially, that's why I stayed. Initially, I stayed because, you know, I guess I liked the hugs, especially the females back then. Today, I ain't thinking all the crazy stuff that I used to think back then, thankfully. And you know what? I know that my self-esteem isn't tied up in a girl that's on my arm anymore. See, why I'm here is because initially I needed to stop using. But more importantly, once I stuck around here long enough, I learned that it wasn't just about stop using. See, when I came in, I heard people talking about, you know, you don't ever have to use again. And initially I came in to, you know, get out of the trouble I was in with the law. And I guess I kind of did really want to stop using drugs. And I thought that that was all it was about. And, you know, my life would get better. From sticking around, though, and listening to what others had to share, I started to realize it was more about change. If I wasn't going to change, eventually I'd be doomed to the same old stuff. And I'd be back where I was at. And I needed to learn how to change. And I started getting involved in doing some step work with my sponsor. And I had three home groups whenever I first came in. I kept them for a long time. I kept them for about 4 years. Minus the time in the penitentiary in between. But I guess if you want to count that, it's more than 4 years. But, you know, I did the things that were suggested. I went to meetings, got a home group, got a sponsor. I called them. And, you know, when I went over that assignment that I was talking about, you know, writing what the first word of first step meant to my sponsor, after I read it to him, he asked me to name my we. And back then, I said Lou, Alan, Dawn, Chuck, and a few other names. And he said, who else? And I couldn't think any more names. And he said, you're missing somebody. And I said, no, I covered everybody. And he said, how about God? And I understood. You know, I don't know that everyone can, you know, understands that early in recovery. I did. And I was raised with a God that I understand today. And today I'm grateful that I understand it's all about God. Why are we here? I didn't have any clue that, you know, it was about God. You know, it was all about my self-centered ass. I didn't know how to be self-centered. It was all about me and what's in it for me. More and more and more, me, me, me. I don't give a rat's hooch about you. And today, I'm capable of, to the best of my knowledge, functioning in a self, in a God-centered state. And I wake up every morning and I ask God for help, and I strive to, you know, hit the day going that way and stay that direction throughout the day, because I know what my, you know, in between my years gets me. It gets me all kinds of insanity, all kinds of insanity. I didn't know how to show up at work on time. No, I didn't know how to keep a job. since I've been in recovery, I've had a few different jobs, and one I had for, actually, I've had two different jobs. The longest I had was 8 years, and I'm now in a position where I'm coming up on 8 years again in a job that I left that one for. And I'll probably be in that a lot longer, in a day at a time, God willing. You know, but I don't have to, you know, make excuses for not showing up at work. I'm able to be responsible in that way and show up and do a good job and not look for reasons to quit or say F you and screw you and, you know, go back to selling dope thinking I'm going to, you know, make millions of dollars selling dope. And, you know, the other thing, too, is recovery doesn't promise assets or material things. It simply promises another day clean and recovery and freedom spiritually as long as we live the principles. If we get in here and we learn and do the work, though, sometimes that other stuff comes along. And today, I have a life that I couldn't imagine I'd have the responsibilities that I do. I'm now my parents' parent. I make more money legally than I ever did probably dealing dope. And I haven't really thought about it for a long time, but I was thinking about it on the way down here. And don't take it the wrong way, because it just kind of boggles my own mind, because I grew up in a real poor neighborhood thinking that my life would never amount to anything. I probably finish out the month at like around 12 grand in income, and that just like boggles my mind. I had two twins that I grew up with. And I remember when we were little, we always used to, you know, when we go down in the woods and play or whatever, we talk about if one of us got rich, we'd take care of the other person, and the other two would never have to worry. And when I was in the penitentiary, I was looking at something that had to deal with a God that I understand, and I got a chill right down my spine, because I was looking at this picture, thinking, you know, some thoughts about that, and this other thought came through my mind about, it was kind of parallel to that thought with them twins about the other ones would be taken care of and giving it away. And I realized, because when I got to the, you know, pen, I had a lot of recovery already under my belt because I was working this program. And I realized that I was wasn't giving it materially back then, rather spiritually. Because all I had to do is keep showing up and giving away what I already had. And I was living that dream just in a different way. And you know what? I've been poor in recovery. I've had money in recovery. And the bottom line is the real true riches in this program are the spiritual gifts that we get by being connected through each other. Thanks for sharing, John. That wasn't me. That was someone in the audience that I was referring to. Another John. Just in case that got taped. And, you know, it's like the things that I do have today, I believe that I have them largely because I have always tried to do the next right thing and share what I have in recovery. And I think, you know, God feels that I have the responsibility to manage what he's given me. And what I do have, whether it's spiritually, materially, I share with everybody. And that's something that's real foreign to before recovery days. Because I wasn't sharing stuff with anybody. If I had something, mine. Don't touch. It was mine. And recovery's enabled me to come, you know, 360 degrees on that and share everything that I have in my life today. You know, the other thing about recovery too is I always had that, you know, in between my years, you know, the war going on in there. And I always tried to fight that by, you know, taking more dope, drinking more alcohol. And it never ever really worked. And initially, whenever I started doing all that stuff, I had some fun doing it. But somewhere along the line, you know, that went away. Today, I don't have that war going on in between my years. You know, 99% of the time, it's pretty calm in there. You know, every 1% of the time, I still get that. And I realize that'll be that way the rest of my life because it's always there. This thing about we never recover, I don't buy that crap. And that's just me. You know, we all have our own opinions. You know, when I was new, I thought, I'll never recover. And that's like a bunch of crap. And I got to do this the rest of my life? Well, I accept that I need to do it the rest of my life today. However, there's a lot of things that I have recovered. You know, I'm able to show up at work today on time. I'm able to pay my bills. If I'm involved in a relationship, I don't cheat. You know, those are things that I have recovered, that I am healthy at. So to say that I haven't recovered, but do I need to continue doing the work to maintain that? Absolutely. You know, when I was new, I came into the program in a relationship. And I don't know if it was good or bad, because I don't judge things as good or bad. It just is what it is. And but when I look back, you know, I had a lot of disease thinking in between my ears. I stayed with that girl for all the wrong reasons. It was all about my insecurities. You know, because she stayed with me, I thought that I had something to offer, that I was something worthwhile. And my self-esteem was coming from an exterior source. Today, I know that I need to get my own self-value and self-worth through working steps and showing up a day and taking responsibility for what's in my life. You know, and if I am involved in a relationship, you know, I don't need to get insecure with thinking about, you know, if she goes to the gym or something, you know, well, who's she working out with? You know, who's she back in the locker room fucking? You know, I don't need to go there today, because if she does, I don't need to hang on to it, where in the old days I would have hung on to something like that, thinking that something was wrong with me. And today I've evolved to the point where I realize there's something better. You know, that just wasn't meant to be. And it's real easy for us to get caught up in, you know, when we get with somebody else, whether, you know, it's, you know, if it's male getting with a female or female vice versa or however it goes, you know, we're shallow people sometimes. At least I was, because as soon as I got that first piece of ass, you know, I was stuck. You know, I'd stay in there and stay in there and stay in there, and all of a sudden one day my eyes would open up, and it's like all these things that are part of this person, the way they act and their character and morals are completely different than mine. You know, what the heck happened? You know, I fell in love with sex. You know, I wasn't open to who the person truly was. All I cared about was filling my own self-centered needs for the moment, and then getting lost in it and being insecure that, you know, I couldn't get in something, find someone healthy. You know, I always trap myself. You know, today, you know, if I date, I realize I don't got to stay there. You know, I can look at a person for who they are from the beginning instead of waking up one day, you know, a year or 2 years later, and who is this person? You know, the other thing is, I always used to be real good at thinking, you know, they'll become the person I want them to be. Fantasy, my first drug in life. You know, you think I'd learn. Well, thankfully I have. But in early recovery, I couldn't see that. You know, I'd stay stuck in those kind of situations. You know, I came in here because I wanted to get a life. Why are we here? I wanted to get a life. I wanted to live life socially acceptable and responsible, but I didn't have a clue. And when I came in and I watched other people, I saw what they did, and I just tried to copy what they were doing initially. And people used to, you know, encourage me and tell me you can do it. You know, most of my life I really didn't have anybody that did that. You know, in most of my life, well, I can't say most of my life anymore. I've been clean a long time, so that's actually a lie. But in active addiction, I couldn't share things with people. People either belittled me if I shared something intimate with them, or mocked it, betrayed me, took it somewhere else. And that's just how the story goes on the street. in recovery, I'm able to share things with people, and you know, 9 out of 10 times, it's staying with that person. They're not going to mock me or belittle me. They're going to love me no matter what, unconditionally, whatever it is. You know, and I've shared, you know, I've gone through the steps. So I've done the 5th, 6th, and 7th step with sponsor a few times. And you know what? Any of the dirt that I've ever shared in it has never came around and bit me back in the butt. And that's not that I'm not free to share that with people. You know, I don't need to go out and wear it as an emblem that says, hey, I'm okay because I can share this. But there's something that happens when we get rid of that stuff that we become free and okay with ourselves. We keep it down in and hide it. It keeps us sick, you know, in whatever area of our life that, you know, that issue pertains to. And we need to deal with that and free ourselves. That's how we grow. That's how I grow. You know, and through doing that, I used to think I had a lot of really good friends before I got into recovery. And I understand today that it was all about what was in one pocket or the other, how much dope or money I had, and who was getting a free ride. And today, the beauty that's evolved in my life is it's about love and friendship. And I have friends that are truly closer to me than my own biological family, which amazes me. I went to a wedding about a month ago, and we had a good time there, and but it made me sick to see the phoniness in my relatives. Yeah, you know, just talking out of their side of the neck about, yeah, I miss you, love you, and, you know, acting like they care, but, you know, how come I ain't heard from them in 15 years? You know, if someone doesn't hear from me in a couple days or a week, I usually get a phone call. And it's usually vice versa. And that's real nice. Because no one ever just called to say, hey, how are you, or chat. You know, like what I said, why are we here about getting free? I came in because I wanted a life and wanted to get free. When I was 5 years old, I was in a basement with another friend. It was a male friend, and we were naked and we were playing around, and you know, 5 years old, you don't really know any better, but I didn't understand that. My father looked down under a ledge, and he seen us, and I knew he seen us, but he didn't know I saw him seeing us. But I saw that look on his face, and I understood what that look meant, and I carried around a lot of shame, and it never got talked about. And I thought something was wrong for a long, long time. And what I know today as a result of, you know, doing the work is if it had been a female, we would have been doing the same thing. We were 5 years old, and we just didn't know any better. But because no one ever talked to me or addressed the issue, you know, I thought something was wrong. And that's the case in a lot of areas of my life. You know, early on, I went up the steps to the bedroom area, and I heard all these papers rustling. I seen my father. He was throwing all these papers under the mattress, and he put his finger up to his lips and went, shh, don't tell Mom. And what do you think, as a little kid, I learned that day? I learned how to lie, and that it was okay to lie. He just endorsed it. But on the other hand, he would tell me not to lie. But his actions said differently. You know, so there was a lot of things that, you know, I was confused about growing up, because there was a lot of other instances like that through childhood that I had to address through the steps and work to a healthy manner, so that, you know, I come to understand what really truly is right and what is, you know, unhealthy. I don't like to say right, healthy and unhealthy. You know, so today I understand the difference. And I also understand how important it is not to do the same thing. You know, not to say, shh, don't tell somebody, you know, or, you know, have someone cover something up for me with a lie and endorse that kind of stuff. I need to own who I am every moment of my day and my life, and I am who I am. And as long as I do that, I manage to stay free. It doesn't always mean that it's easy, because feelings go along with that, and sometimes life is life, and sometimes I'm still an addict. Well, I'm always a recovering addict, but sometimes still my defects are always there. When they pop up, it doesn't feel good. And I have two choices. I can either go get high and loaded, which really for me ain't an option today, or I can work through it. You know, what principles can I practice? You know, how can I address the situation? Call my sponsor, call some of my support group, call some of the guys I sponsor. You know, because I believe sponsorship's a two-way street. I don't only just call my sponsor, but I also call people that I happen to sponsor. And that's just me. That's a pet peeve because my first sponsor, he never used to share anything with me except for whenever I called. I believe it's meant to be a two-way street. That's why the word's we. You know, it ain't about because I'm a sponsor, I'm better than you, and I can't talk to you. You know, we're all in here with the same disease, and it's about living or dying, period. It ain't about I'm better than you or you're better than me. You know, we all come from different places. We have the same thing in common, what we feel and why we used. You know, and that's what connects us, and that's why we're here. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, John. Our next speaker is Richard from Why Die?
Recovering act. My name is Rich. You know, I was kind of torn there. I'm sitting. I love to hear John share, and like I'm sitting there thinking about like what am I going to say? Because like I was asked 5 minutes beforehand if our other speaker doesn't show up, could I fill in? And like my first response wanted to be like no, like I don't want to do that, but I've learned from coming around for a little bit here that no is not usually the right answer when you're asked to help. When I said, yeah, I wasn't even sure what the topic was. And I said, yeah, I'll do it. What's the topic? And they said, why are we here? I'm like, all right. I think I have something to share on that. I can't say for sure why you're here. There's a lot of things that reasons I hope you're here. Hopefully a lot of them are the same reasons I'm here. And I was just sharing with someone this afternoon about this particular event here. It's very, very special to me for a lot of reasons. For one thing, I've been involved with this for the past 10 years now in some capacity or another. And I've enjoyed the service I've done for this event, but probably most importantly is Journey Continues 2 was the very first NA event I ever attended. I've been around for a while and just didn't understand that one word that John talked about, we. I didn't know what the we was about. I thought I did. Just like a lot of other times in my life, I thought I knew some shit, and it turns out I didn't really understand it at all. When I was hanging the banners this afternoon, when I hang that very first banner, it always gives me like a weird feeling. Because like, I was still clean when that first event took place. I had almost 8 years clean. And somebody told me about this event they were having at this camp, and I thought it was kind of corny. I was scheduled to work that weekend, but like my work schedule, the people I work with are great. You know, I share my recovery with them. They know why I do what I do, and I'm sure if I had tried, I could have been here. But I decided it wasn't for me. Like I said, I'd never been to an NA event before, and 2 months later, I relapsed. Now, had I been here, would I relapse? I don't know. You know, I don't know. Maybe if I had attended, I would have not understood at that point what these types of events had to offer. I always struggle with that whole thing because, like, when they do clean time countdowns and stuff, like, when I hear, like, 18 years, I'm thinking, like, man, I could have had that. You know, there's a couldas, you know, the couldas. And, you know, like our literature says, though, sometimes it's a relapse that takes to really get somebody serious about their recovery. And when I get, like, real honest about it, like, of those first 8 years abstinent, I had a few years of recovery in there, but a lot of it was just that, just abstinence. I first got clean Christmas of 1989. And I was clean until, I was abstinent until October of 97. I only used for one night, and it really was the worst day of my life. All that stuff that people talk about, that spiritual bankruptcy, physical, mental, emotional, like I thought I knew what it was about, but until I picked up that chemical again, I didn't really understand what it was about. The relapse actually started long before that. You know, like I said, I didn't understand the we. I didn't know why we were here. I knew why I was there, and it changed over those first few years. Like, when I first got clean, like, I went to rehab because I wanted my wife off my back, you know. I'd fallen down the steps and cracked a rib, and I had to go to my family doctor who I'd known since he was a resident, and he, like, freaked out when he saw the needle marks all over my arms. And, like, he didn't know what to do. So, probably out of fear, because I thought he was going to call the cops or something. I didn't know what the hell was going to happen. I agreed to go see this counselor. And, like, they kept telling me, man, you need rehab. You need rehab. I'm like, I think I can do outpatient. Like, I'll be all right. You know, I can stop using. I kept telling myself that every time I stuck a needle in my arm, I can stop using any time I want to. I just choose not to. You know? And so finally I agreed to go to this rehab just to get them off my back. And I didn't know why I was gone. Like, I didn't understand that it was about not using anymore. I thought they were going to teach me how to use successfully. Like, those people that, like, I grew up with. Actually not grew up with, it's people I went to college with. In my college class, there was probably 130 people, and like 100 of those people used. And like, they grew up at that during that time, and they put that shit down. And I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to put it down. So I went to this rehab, and like, I wouldn't even identify myself as an addict. I said, my name is Rich, I abuse drugs. And they like called me on that shit every day. And I'm like, I'm no addict. Not an addict. An addict's a guy laying under a bridge with a needle in his arm, homeless, and nothing to eat. And that's not me. And I also heard John mention about denial, and like, that was a big part of it, that denial. Like, I understand today that recovery is not equal to social acceptability, and I realize addiction with social acceptability also had nothing to do about recovery. Because, like, I'm still at my same job. Next week I'll be there 26 years. And, I had a house, I had a wife, I had a dog, I had a son, I had a new car. My wife had a new car. Like, how am I an addict? You know, and somewhere around 2 weeks back then rehabs were all 30 days, you know, none of the 7-day miracle cures and shit like they got today. And somewhere around 2 weeks in, I woke up in the middle of the night, a little bit of sleep I was getting, and like, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. What the hell have you done to yourself? You know, I went to rehab in a psych hospital, and like, I'm locked up. Like, I'd never been behind bars. I'd never been in a place where I couldn't just go wherever I wanted to. And, like, I finally started to take some responsibility at that point, that like, something I did is responsible for me being here. Now I got to find out what the hell to do about it. So I actually started listening a little bit there. And when I got out, like, out of rehab, I had to sign a contract with the state because of my job, and one of the things I had to do was get a sponsor. So like, I started going to meetings, and like, there was this guy that showed up a lot, so I figured he'd be a good sponsor, so I asked him. And is that the best sponsor relationship I've ever had? No, but I got some stuff out of it. You know, I did go through the steps with that guy, and things were real different back then. Like, I always hate to say we only had the basic text, because like, the basic text is a great book, but we didn't have step working guides or it works how and why and stuff like that, you know. So working the steps was very different back then. You know, there was a lot less writing and a lot more face-to-face talking at that time. And at least that's the way it worked for me. And, you know, I could say that, like, I did a lot of changing in those first few years. And like, I saw my life get better. I didn't understand that it would. I didn't know why it was. You know, I've had sponsees ask me, look, can you tell me how this works? I'm like, no, I can't tell you how it works. I can tell you it does, though. If I continue to do what I'm suggested to do, somehow my life just continues to get better. And, you know, I did that for a few years. And I think I had about 3 years clean and my sponsor relapsed. And took me a little while, probably about a year or so, to get another sponsor. And it probably was a bad move on my part. I picked this guy because he did the same job I did. And, like, I thought that, like, that would make it easier for me to relate to him. And today I realize, like, that has very little to do with what I can learn about recovery from a person. And then he moved away. And strictly my fault, I just couldn't do the long-distance thing, and that relationship just sort of fell apart. So for the next couple of years, I had a real idiot for a sponsor. I had myself. And back in 95, I got a call one day at work from my sister that my dad had died. And, like, it was sort of unexpected. He'd had some heart trouble and stuff, but, like, he was pretty healthy. You know, he was 77 years old, but, you know, he seemed pretty healthy. And, you know, to this day, I don't remember if I ever shared that with anybody else in recovery, that, like, my dad had died. Because, like, I could handle it. Like, I really believed, like, I was cured. And, like, John said, are we recovered? Like, I was beyond recovered. I was cured. You know, the only reason I went to meetings was to help you people out, because you were sick. You know? And 5 weeks later, my mother died. And, you know, when I look back at it now, that really was the beginning of that relapse. See, there's this cliche that goes around. I don't hear it too much anymore, but it was real big when I first came around. I don't think I really understood what they meant, because it said the same person will use again. Like, I didn't realize that I was becoming that same person. You know, I was becoming that person that thought he could handle anything on his own, because I didn't understand the we. You know, yeah, I'd worked some steps. Yeah, I'd made some changes in my life. But did I really let people know what was going on? You know, later on, I asked some people that were, like, in my home group and stuff at that time, did I ever tell you my parents died? Or, like, yeah, like, after you relapsed, which was, like, 2 years later. And like I said, I had the opportunity to come to the first Journey Continues, and I chose not to do that. And 2 months later, on a Wednesday night, when I should have been in my home group, I stayed home and tried to get high. I say I tried to get high because I didn't get high, but I got stupid. My wife walked into the kitchen, and I was trying to figure out how does a lid come off a soda bottle, because I couldn't quite figure out how that worked. And probably the only good thing that happened that night was she said to me, "You're using again, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And we stayed up all night long. You know, I cried, and like I didn't know what to do. And she asked me, "Said, do you think you need to go to rehab again?" I wasn't really sure what to say at that point, but I said, no, I don't think so. I need to do something different. And I waited a week to go back to my home. I wanted to go back to my home group. I didn't want to go to another meeting. And at that time, we were meeting at the hospital I work at right now, and it's a huge place. And like, I drove around that block probably 20 minutes just looking for an excuse not to walk back through that door. Because, like, I had, like, all the wrong things in my head, what was going to happen. People were going to laugh at me. People were going to, like, judge me. People were going to hate me for what I'd done. And I remember when I walked in that very first day there, the meeting had already started. They were going through the readings. And, like, people kind of gave me the little high sign. And, like, I think they just saw the look on my face. And, like, I saw their faces drop because they knew something was really wrong. And when the readings were done and stuff, and the meeting opened up, I shared that I had used the week before. And I'll never forget it. There was one guy that came up to me, and, you know, I've heard people agree or disagree with this, but he told me, he said, at this point, all you've lost is your clean date. What you do now is going to determine the rest of your life. And, like, that sounded real wise and stuff that day, and I didn't really understand what he was talking about. But, wow, is that a bat? Yeah, cool. I didn't really understand what he was talking about, you know, but I knew, like, I had to get something out of that. Like, I don't know if it was a spiritual awakening or God telling me, like, you need to listen to this guy, something, because it's like one of the curses of where I live is I have to drive at least 20 miles to a meeting, so I got like a half hour ride, and that's also one of the blessings, because when I leave a meeting, I have some time, like, to just kind of reflect on what I heard. And that night when I left, you know, I started thinking about what he was talking about. And it sort of hit home to me that, like, it wasn't that I lost all the knowledge I had. It's that I hadn't applied any of it. You know? What good is, like, if I know how to build a rocket but I never do it, what good is the knowledge? You know, and that's what my recovery had become. Like, I knew all this stuff, but I didn't do anything with it. It didn't help me, and it sure as hell didn't help you. You know, so I started to take a real honest look at, like, what was wrong with my program. You know, what was my program instead of the NA program? And a lot of it boiled down to that we part of it. God acts in funny ways, because, like, a couple of weeks later, these guys from Johnstown and Indiana showed up at my home group. And the area was about a year old at that point. And they came to Altoona to see if they'd get some people involved. And we were meeting in Johnstown back then. And where I live was, like, I was the closest person to Johnstown. So, like, I volunteered to be a GSR. I had no idea what a GSR was, what area service was, none of that stuff. And I'll never forget that very first area service I went to. And that was the very first time I met John. He was filling in for literature, because the guy who's my sponsor right now was a literature chair, and he was out of town. John was filling in. And, like, it was crazy. It was crazy. Like, everybody's screaming and yelling. And, like, I guess I'm guilty of it, too. I've heard it referred to as area circus. And that's kind of what it felt like while I was in the middle of it. But I saw something, like, really miraculous happen. And I don't think the word miracle is, like, short of it. Because, like, here's a group, a room full of these people. And they have very little in common other than the fact that they're in this program. And by the end of the day, like, everybody in that room had come to some level of acceptance with what happened. And, like, nobody went away mad. Like, I grew up in Philly, and, like, that kind of shit didn't happen, man. Like, when you were done with that shit, you'd look for him tomorrow so you could kick his ass, you know? It just, no one got okay with stuff like that. So I realized, like, these people got some shit to teach me, you know? I'm going to keep coming here for a while. And I had no idea what I was getting myself in for at that point, because I have since become a service junkie. You know, I love service. I don't think recovery is service, but it sure as hell a big part of it. Because for me, that's where I learned about the we. When this event came up the next year, I'd been going to meetings in a little town called Evansburg, and this woman that was at that meeting was our programming chair that year, and she asked me if I wanted to help out. I'm like, yeah, I guess. You know, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And I got here, and, like, I was just amazed at what was happening here. You know, I wish people could, like, get inside my head and know what it felt like to finally understand what the word we meant. Because, like I said, at that point, I had been around this fellowship for 9 years. But that's exactly how I was, around the fellowship. I wasn't really part of it. You know, I hadn't found out how to fit in here. And, like, of all the places in the world to fit in, this is pretty damn easy. We're pretty accepting of people. Like, I think of this as, like, training ground. You know, when I got some shit going on in my life, like at work, I, like, try to find situations with people in recovery to, like, practice on. Because, like, I know you won't get mad at me. And if you do, you'll get over it. And if you don't, you can borrow my cell phone and call your sponsor. But, like, in real life, out there, people aren't that accepting, you know? I know that's a big part of why I'm still here. Because, like, my life outside of recovery, and I sort of, as the years have gone by, things have started to mesh a little more, but there's still, like, partitions. Not that I'm a different person, but I deal with things a little differently. You know, there's my recovery stuff, and then there's my family stuff, and then there's my work stuff. And they all meld together a little bit, but there's certain things that I'm better at or worse at in those situations. And what I found is that, like, no matter what that situation is, whether it's my family, my work, you know, friends outside this fellowship, like, I can learn about that in here. You know, when I first came here, I heard people saying that, like, if it doesn't apply, let it fly. And I found out, like, that's not for me. If it doesn't apply, I put it in my pocket. Because tomorrow it might apply. Because whatever you're talking about today may be a situation I've never gone through, and I may be faced with it tomorrow. And I've seen that happen on a regular basis in my life. See, I believe God works through people. God, in my understanding, works through you. I can't tell you how many times I've been jammed up on something, and, like, whether it be a newcomer, somebody with a lot of time, and occasionally, sometimes, even people outside the fellowship.
Like, they show up in my life right when they're supposed to be there. And I know if I wasn't here, they wouldn't be there. Because I keep asking for God's will for me. And he reveals that to me through you people. You know, when I showed up here today, I got here late today. I'm usually here like right at noon because I like can't wait for this thing to start. And I didn't get here at about 1:30, and there was only a couple people here. And I kind of felt like disappointed because like I wanted like 50 people here already. That's the added to me. Like, I want everybody here when I get here, you know. And you know, as the evening rolled on, the afternoon went by, more and more people started showing up. I sort of got a little overwhelmed at a point because, like, as every car drove up, I realized, I know those people. I know those people. I know those people, you know? And if I look at, like, the two parts of my recovery, if you will, before relapse and after relapse, like, you could count on one hand. Like, John was talking about, like, his sponsor at one point asked him to name his we. Well, he got through a lot more names than I could have. I probably had, like, three names. That was my we. And that really wasn't much of a we because, like, I only saw them at meetings. And, you know, today, like, the gifts of this type of stuff is just, like, I hate to keep using the word miracle, but, like, that's what it is in my life. You know, to me, a miracle is God working in my life when I don't even ask him to. And, you know, like I said, I've had a lot of positions at this particular event. You know, I was blessed again last year to be able to chair it. And the people that I've met here, I couldn't even begin to start naming names of all the people that are actually at least some part of my way. See, for me, like, the we is kind of like an onion. You know, it's got all these different layers. And people sort of move in and out, like, as our lives change. There's people, like, I'll see every week at my home group, and then all of a sudden I don't see them for a little while because, like, I'm not making it up there. This is, like, 40 miles of my home group in the wintertime with the weather and stuff. Sometimes I don't get to make it up there. So I go to other meetings, and, like, my we changes a little bit. And what I found out is, like, God has this great plan for me. A lot of days I have no clue what it is. Every now and then he gives me, like, these little glimpses. And the one that always comes to mind, and part of why I keep coming here, is I'm a volunteer on our area helpline. And I was talking to someone this afternoon about that. She'd recently become a volunteer on the helpline. She hasn't gotten any calls yet. And I was telling her, like, how frustrated I was because in the last 2 years, I think I've gotten two calls from addicts. Everybody else is, like, a family member, a spouse, somebody at work, you know. And, like, it gets frustrating because, like, there's not much I can tell these people. All I can tell them is, like, if that person wants to do something about their life, please give them this phone number and have them call. And I don't know how often that happens. And I was just getting ready to, like, give up that commitment and say, like, take me off the volunteer list. And there was this guy in Altoona that, like, I had known for a couple of months and stuff and didn't know him real well or anything like that. And I went to this new meeting they were having down there, and he happened to be sharing giving his lead that night. And he started talking about how he got here. And he started talking about his call to the helpline. And, like, when he mentioned his grandmother and some other things, I'm like, damn, I took that call. I'm the person that was there when he reached out. And, like, he didn't know it either. You know, neither of us knew it at that point. And I went up to him after the meeting, and I started talking about some other parts of that conversation that he hadn't mentioned. And he's like, how do you know that? I think he thought, like, our phone line was bugged or something, you know, and we published it on the internet. And I'm like, dude, like, I'm the guy that managed to take that phone call from you, and, like, you have no idea what you've talked about tonight, how it's touched me. You know, I think he had, like, 9 months at that point or something like that. And I could see, like, in his eyes that, like, he's thinking like I did for a long time. Like, if you got more clean time than me, there's not a lot I can give you. And I don't believe that today. You know, the guy with one day might walk in here and say exactly what I need to hear. Because you know what? If he walked in here with one day, I believe God sent him. He may have done a little bit of the footwork, just like I do in my life. I don't depend on God to do for me. I depend upon God to put a map in front of me and for my footwork to be able to follow it. And I only learned that from here. Because, you know, when I got here, I thought everybody had to do for me. You know, if you weren't doing for me, I really didn't have time for you. Like I said, I don't know why anybody else is here.
You know, when I'm in a meeting and they ask me to close the meeting, and some people think it's a little too long-winded, but one of the things I talk about as I close that meeting is that I ask for prayers for the person who's picking up for the first time tonight, and for the person who's picking up for the last time and will lose their life without finding this new way to live. Because, like, I buried a lot of people, way more than I ever want to know about. You know, and unfortunately, a lot of those people were very young. And I don't know why they died. I hate when I hear people say it, and I know it's in our literature that some must die so others can live. But, like, I hate admitting to the fact that, like, some people are going to die from this disease. I don't know why God's will would be for them people to die. I don't understand it. But see, that's why I'm okay with the God of my understanding today. I'm never, well, I don't know about never, maybe, you know, when I'm on some other side or something, like, I'll understand, like, why God does everything he does. But I do know that the God of my understanding is a loving God, and that anything he does somehow is out of love. I remember a guy who came to my home group for a while, and, like, he just couldn't get clean. He'd get clean for a week or two, and he'd relapse. And his life was miserable. And they found his body, like, decomposing after a couple of weeks in his apartment. And because nobody had called. You know? He was in and out so much that, like, people just got to the point where if he's not here, like, he's out using again, but he'll come back. He didn't get to come back. And, you know, I remember talking to my sponsor about that, and like, he didn't have any answers for me, but he gave me some guidance on, like, what I need to look at. And, like, I believe, like, maybe that was the most merciful thing God could do for him, is to end that pain. You know, it's like, in my line of work, I deal with dying people on a regular basis. And some of the medication orders I see and part of are maybe just this side short of ending that person's life. I like to believe that it's just letting them go peacefully the way God intended them to. But I do struggle with that sometimes. But I understand that, like, at some points, a life is no longer worth living because it's so filled with pain. And I do pray that, like, God's will for anybody that's here today and anybody who walks in any meeting is that they never have to use again. Is that going to be the case? No. You know, you look at the statistics. People relapse. I just know that part of why I'm here is to help that person that walks through the door and doesn't know what to do. I remember my very first meeting out when I came out of rehab. I had no clue. Like, we had been to some outside meetings, and like, I was still kind of in a daze and shit. And I still didn't really understand at all, like, what the meetings were for. And I remember in that very first meeting, there was a guy talking about flunking the GED that day. And, like, I was still looking for reasons to disqualify myself. Like, I admitted I was an addict, but, like, I was different than you guys. And this guy talking about flunking his GED, I'm thinking, like, I'm a college graduate. I'm, you know, professional in my career. You know, I go, what's this about? And it was like a week later when I asked that guy to sponsor me, not the guy Sharon, another guy, and I told him that. And he told me something that, like, I've held on to ever since. He said, stop listening to the words people say and start listening to the feelings behind them. And again, like, when I heard it, like, I knew it was profound and shit, but I didn't understand what he was talking about. But, like, even today, like, I go into some meetings, especially, like, speaker meetings, sometimes, like, when the people are sharing, like, I have nothing in common with them. As a matter of fact, you guys were up recently, and the guy that shared at my home group a couple of weeks ago, like, our stories are, like, so different. There is no fact in common between our stories except for the feelings behind that story. And, like, I loved his lead because I could relate at the level of feelings. And see, that's one thing I believe human beings all share. We all have those same basic needs for love, and I find them in these rooms. That's why I keep coming back, because if nothing else, like, I feel okay while I'm here. On some days, like, I don't feel okay anywhere else. But when I walk into a meeting, I feel like I'm back home, you know, in a comfortable place. Sometimes I wish like words could describe more of what goes on inside me, and I can't. You know, there's a tape I listen to a lot. It was taped in our regional convention back in 1990. It's a woman named Fran O, which I'm very jealous John got to meet last year in Hawaii. And she talks about spiritual awakenings. And she says that to her, a spiritual awakening is when you realize you're right where you belong and you know why you're there. And like I've been at meetings that like I've been on both sides of that message, both I know why I was there because I needed to hear what that person said. And there's been that meeting or two that I've been at that I said something and someone came up to me and told me like how much that related to their life right that day. And I don't think that's coincidence. That's another one of those miracles. Because like a lot of those times I had no idea who that person was or what they were going to say, but I was right where I belonged. And I know tonight I belong right here. You know, I hope the weather holds out for the weekend, but if it doesn't, you know what? I'm going to have a great weekend anyway, and I hope you all do too. Thanks for letting me share.